Radio's coverage of AusCert's 2008 conference is sponsored by Microsoft. Visit itradio.com.au/AusCert08 for IT Radio's full coverage of this year's event and to hear Microsoft's AusCert presentations. Or go to itradio.com.au/security for the Risky Business podcast, honing your eardrums since February 2007.
Hello and welcome to this special interview. I'm Patrick Gray. The following is an interview with the former Director of Information Assurance for America's National Security Agency, Brian Snow. He joined the NSA in 1971 after founding the Computer Science Department at Ohio University in the 60s. He spent his first 20 years at the NSA directing research and development into cryptographic and secure systems. And he also created and managed NSA's Secure Systems Design Division in the 80s. I caught up with Brian after his speech, in which he argued commercial software lacks quality, reliability, and safety. In other words, we can do better. I suppose by way of introducing you, I could really say that you've been someone who's been very influential in information security, but someone who's, by the nature of their job, had to fly under the radar. Would that be fair to say?
Yes. I would also say that information security is a young industry, dating from 1980 or so forward in its more robust aspects in the public sector. But information security has been a thriving industry among governments for many, many decades before that. And I was active in that early time span. My career with the agency started in 1971, and I did go to the first crypto conference in Santa Barbara in 1980. I went to the first OusCrypt conference in 1990. I went to many of the first startup conferences as the field was being birthed externally. And I was present in the agency, and not as aggressive as many agency folk were in trying to damp down the outsiders talking about our stuff.
Yeah.
I felt it was appropriate and that it needed to be talked about in the external world, and I was giving speeches early on, even then, very carefully vetted by the PAO, Public Affairs Office, but trying to carry an honest message from the agency about what we could and could not do to help the commercial sector as a government organization that is limited. But I felt that cooperation would be far better than antagonism, and the public sector needed to be served in some sense. And the agency now, I'm happy to say, is far more over in that posture than it used to be. It's gotten over its desire to own everything and that it was our, you know, their technology and not anybody else's, how dare you look at it, sort of scenario, where today they are actively sharing configuration guides for operating systems. They actively seek to work on standards bodies and other groups with goodwill and cooperation between them and the commercial sector, trying to share what we can release from the classified world. And it's not a perfect relationship just yet, and I doubt it ever will be because of the classification barriers, but it's far better than it used to be. Mm-hmm. I'm very proud of the agency in a more forward-leaning posture.
How does it feel to actually be on the outside of the agency now and, you know, free to come to conferences like this and talk to people like me?
Invigorating, but this is, as I mentioned, the first example of actually participating in an interview without mother sitting beside me. And so I really don't know yet the full extent to answer that. It is a work in progress, if you will. I feel quite comfortable advising companies as far as being a spokesperson speaking independently on security matters. That's a role I am developing, but one that I like and would hope to pursue further. I think I do have contributions and ways to help, just as an individual acting as an independent consultant who has opinions.
Super pundit in the making?
Something like, but of course the value of having a pundit from the commercial viewpoint is you can ignore him as you wish. You ask for the advice. If you like it, you take it and try it. If you don't like it, all you lost was some time.
Now, you know, your presentation earlier today was very interesting in that it was, I suppose, a view on security and a view on product security in particular that you're not quite used to seeing from the private sector, because you threw a lot of assumptions out of the window, like things like time to market, things like really throwing what many commercial organizations and software organizations would consider to be crazy resources at the security problem. But Do you really think that's what's required? We really need to go back and just be thorough? Because that's what I took away from your talk,
yes.
is that we need to be thorough and we need to do things properly and stop just putting new levels on this rickety tower that's crumbling.
As a cartoon reading of it, that's accurate. I would not challenge that. But there is more nuance behind it. When I first started giving this general approach of we need more assurance, and I've been giving a speech like this, I update it, you know, monthly or yearly, whenever I go out and give it again, from about 1997 onward. I gave it at the 1999 RSA conference. I gave it at other places. And vendors called me crazy. And even one guy got in a sweat and left the room in a rage. He didn't want to stay there and listen to this. I won't use the word he used. But he wasn't happy with it.
Because you were telling him that perhaps it was a good idea if software manufacturers spent more time...
He wanted me to pay more attention to time to market, to competitive pressures, to these sorts of things. Bruce Schneier, I won't say good friend, but we know each other very well. We've talked over the years. Was a little poo-poo-ish of it, felt I didn't really get the message when I first started this many years ago. But recently, about 2 years ago, he revisited the topic, read a paper that I wrote in 2005 documenting it, finally got around to it, and he now recommends it as a paper that should be read.
Mm.
So I do believe that I have been somewhat constant in my call, and the outside world is seeing, if not the full value and we have to do it Snow's way, they are seeing there is value in listening to some of it and what they can incorporate without damaging their competitiveness or the ability to make progress could make sense.
So look, in a nutshell, for people who haven't actually listened to the presentation in its entirety, what is Snow's way?
Well, I call it We Need Assurance, where assurance, very simply, is enough work that is done so that a user or an accreditor will have high confidence that the system works correctly without errors, even in the presence of malice, and does not present surprises, especially unpleasant ones.
Well, it sounds like a very simple concept, but it's a little bit shameful.
At that level, yeah.
Yeah. It is quite shameful, I guess, that we haven't really been able to produce systems that really perform that way, which is somewhat infuriating, isn't it?
Well, there's a key difference here.
Mm.
So many commercial products, when you're making an automobile, when you're making a diaper, when you're bringing out a new food product or something, you don't face, typically, malice. You face a relatively benign environment where your competitor perhaps will be saying nasty things about you, and you can say nasty things about them, but they don't come in trying to corrupt your production line.
Well, and also if someone drives a car off a cliff and it explodes, they don't tend to blame the manufacturer.
Typically, no. Mm. But the problem in the malicious world is not that the owner, with usual appropriate controls, drives the car off the cliff, but then somebody comes up to your car while it's parked and you're sitting in it, pushes you to the side, gets in beside you, drives screaming toward the cliff, and takes you over if you willingly wish to go or not with you tied down. That's the difference between malice.
I didn't think we could go that far with that analogy, but that was brilliant. Thank you.
No, this is the point, and so much when I talk with people, they really don't have an innate, built-in capability to fully consider malice.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't like to think about it. Mm-hmm. And from my career supporting the military from the NSA, which is a DOD agency serving the warfighter, our job is to keep the soldier alive when people are shooting at him.
Mm-hmm.
There is malice in the world, and they go to very great lengths to deliver their bullets on target.
Mm-hmm.
Our job is to make sure the soldier isn't there when it happens by hearing things that they have not jammed his communications, that they are not sending him false messages saying, hey, I am your commander. I want you to move 3 steps to the left. I'll get a better bead on you. That sort of, and we expect that constantly. It's what we work to prevent. Now, granted, you don't face that in the commercial world, so you probably don't need everything I'm asking for on the plate. Nevertheless, the level of malice that you face in the commercial world is getting worse, and even the commercial entities, since they affect the American economy by the way they act, and the world economy as well, I'm not trying to speak as an American solely, I'm sitting here in Australia, you know, it's a world economy issue. There are nation states and enemies who want certain economies weaker, and they will attack the corporate entities in those countries in order to do that, because that's where the money pumps are.
Mm. I can understand that, yes, software security is absolutely vital to the economic lifeblood of a country. I mean, we've had Richard Clarke on the show discussing similar themes last year. But I guess, you know, I wanted to ask you specifically, have you seen any initiatives over the last 5 or 10 years which, you know, you've seen things moving in the direction that you'd like? Have you actually, who are the good actors in this disastrous, horrible little play?
Oh, in the commercial sector.
Yes.
The only reason I'm hesitating, for years working at the agency, we had a very powerful requirement not to compare the commercial sector, especially in public, to other commercial sector people, because they'd be very aggressively defending themselves from that, you know,
government interference in the market. And,
yes, yeah, that sort of stuff. Plus, just, you know, they would claim misrepresentation, even if it wasn't misrepresentation. So I'm reluctant to answer directly. Mm. I do feel some firms are paying a little more attention to it than others, but quite candidly, rather than try to distinguish who are the good guys right now, I still really rather beat the drum of all of them have to start doing better. None of them are doing well enough.
Mm-mm.
I'm not going to give an A-plus to anybody.
Okay, so everybody fails the snow test.
No. They get a B-minus.
Like, okay, so it's not quite a fail. It's
most of them are out there at C-minus, D-plus, in my mind.
So really, I mean, how realistic do you think it is that we start seeing things done your way? Do you think there'll be some sort of tipping point? Some, you know, we've been waiting for that digital Pearl Harbor now for
It's not my way, and I don't want it to be my way. I want it to be a way they internalize and realize on their own is necessary, that it becomes the way. Mm. And that's why I mentioned, you know, I was cursed and yelled at when I started, and since then some others have started to say, hey, that makes sense, that's pretty good. People came up to me after the talk today saying they wanted to hear more. So the message, and it's not Snow's message, it is a message that the federal government used for decades in producing equipment to protect the soldier in the field, where we had to face heavy malice. Mm. And you can dilute down what we had to do in the truly malicious battlefield arena for the types of at least somewhat politer commercial malice that's going on that is somewhat mediated by courts.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, you know, when we think, when we really think about how the judiciary has actually had an impact on cybercrime, and the only way to secure a conviction against an Australian hacker is to make sure that his girlfriend turns on him.
That's always helpful.
Yeah. That's what they call a tip. It doesn't seem to be doing much. Certainly here we've had the Australian High Tech Crime Centre in Canberra for a number of years now, and I think the number of convictions that that organisation has secured against people for computer-related offences, like hacking offences, as opposed to traditional offences, you could probably count on one hand.
Well, I'm not sure how it is in Australia, but it took a while in the United States to actually get the law enforcement entities to build enough internal competence to be capable of mounting a good prosecution for hacker-type crimes or technology crimes.
But the law enforcement aspect seems like a disproportionately, you know, I mean, we're dealing with an asymmetric crime, you know, here, which is really easy to perpetrate, very difficult to prosecute. I mean, would you agree with that there?
Given the current architecture of the net and the way that it works, yes. As it matures and grows over time, it'll become easier.
When there's more of a trust-based architecture, I presume is what you mean by that.
Well, it depends on what you mean by a trust-based architecture. Trust is a very funny word. I like a lot of mutual suspicion in an architecture where nobody trusts anybody too much.
Yeah.
Therefore, you don't open yourself up widely to cookies. The recent case, I'm not sure if you heard it in the talk, where the Pakistani telecom company wanted to protect Pakistanis from the defamatory, they felt, material that was being said about the prophet. So the government told Peking Telecom, keep this stuff from coming in.
Yeah.
So they went to their routing companies that controlled border gateway protocols and said, keep it from coming in. They posted dump, you know, files saying don't let it in. And their peers on either side, with blind trust, because all the routing companies trust each other very well, said, oh, I'll put that in my tables, without even doing what I think they all should adopt, is mutual suspicion of, you're asking me to do things with addresses you don't have control over. Why should I do that?
Yeah,
let's
that
talk
was interesting,
a bit more,
isn't it,
or go to another party. And so rather than looking for a trust model, I'm looking for mutual suspicion, at least among peers.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that case, because the guy who blogged about that and brought that into the public's attention is a guy called Danny McPherson from Arbor Networks, who's actually here at the conference and is presenting. So I'm looking forward to catching up with him, and I think you should as well.
I think I'll try that. Thank you.
Yeah. So Look, Brian Snow, I think we're going to cover it off there. So I think that's a wonderful place to end the interview. It's not about trust, it's about suspicion.
Oh, that's so awfully harsh as an ending. We want to be able to trust from an appropriate basis of mutual respect and limited concerns in some areas, including suspicion when I think you're going too far.
Okay, well, Brian Snow, thank you very much for coming on to Risky Business.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being here. We'll be right back.